Welcome to another episode of the Veterans in Ag podcast, brought to you by AGD Consulting. I'm your host, Mike Dessau, and here we explore the stories and insights from the military veteran and supporter communities who are leading the way for vets in agribusiness, ag tech, and agripreneurship. We swap stories, talk ag, and show how the grassroots nature of the ag community can be a natural fit for the military veteran. My guest today is Jason Burley, Vice President and Director of Cargill's Food Ingredient Sales for North America. Jason's background is incredibly unique, one that spans three different branches of service, the Air Force, the Army, and the Marine Corps, as well as both the officer and the enlisted communities. In this episode, we dive into Jason's story and how it's shaped the approach he's taken today in driving veteran employment within Cargill. Jason shares a similar sentiment facing many veterans today after they transition: a disconnect from the type of bonds formed in a service and in a profession that serves a greater purpose. Jason explains how he found that purpose in agriculture. We also tackle some of the mistakes veterans make when applying their leadership skills into the private sector for the first time. Enjoy. Your service background is one that I have not seen before. It spans three different branches, the officer and the enlisted community. I would love if we could begin today by hearing that story, because I think it offers you such a unique perspective.
Well, first of all, thanks, Mike, for having me back and having another discussion around very important and a topic near and dear to my heart. So happy to give a quick background of how my career progressed. And I was very typical young high school kid in the 80s. I topped out at about 5'10", a buck 35, and was trying to figure out where I wanted to go. I had participated in a program here in Minnesota called the Post-Secondary Option Program, which allowed you to head to university while you were still attending high school. And when I got to the end of graduation and nearly 2 years of college behind me, but I had no idea really where I wanted to go. And there was a lot of that kind of, what are you going to do next? And so adventure was really on my list. And I ended up enlisting in the Marine Corps, to the chagrin of my parents and to the surprise of most of my friends and teachers and counselors, and went off and headed off to the Marine Corps and spent my enlisted time, my initial enlisted time there on active duty with the Marines. And for everybody, there comes that critical juncture of, hey, I think I'm ready to go do something different, or I'm going to make a different step. And so at the end of that enlistment, I decided I think I'm ready to go back to the civilian sector and get back to work. I was not prepared, or at least I was not emotionally prepared for the disconnection from the bonds that I had created in service. And so I ended up enlisting in the Air Force Reserve in Minneapolis with a unit, the 934th Airlift Wing, where I spent a few years, continuing to serve, continuing to, have that camaraderie that we all look for, and came across a great friend who basically said, you're marking time here in the Air Force. This is not your passion. You need to go meet some of our friends in the Minnesota Army National Guard. At the time, I was like, the Guard, I'm a Marine, and this Air Force thing is okay, but the Army National Guard, wow. But lo and behold, I made that transition, was introduced to some incredible people, and made great connections and friends for life in my first initial introduction to a brand new air defense artillery unit that was being stood up within the 34th Infantry Division of the Minnesota Army National Guard. So in that span, I've now gone, I've enlisted, I've been in the Marine Corps on active duty, I've been in the Air Force as a reservist. I've now moved to the Army National Guard, and I'm serving in my, third branch of the services. and the third component as well, in the National Guard. That would have been enough until I met my longtime friend and mentor, Major General Neil Loidl, who says, I think the officer corps for you, have you ever heard of OCS? And lo and behold, within my first 9 months of enlisting in the Minnesota National Guard, I was off to the Fort Benning School for Boys, and there I went. And then received my commission as a second lieutenant in the Air Defense Artillery Branch, and came back to Minnesota thinking I would serve as a traditional guardsman and continue my career. That did not happen, and I end up actually serving on active duty, or what is referred to as the Active Guard and Reserve, the AGR program, as a full-time officer for our battalion, and then inevitably for the division. So that's kind of the long, actually a bitter long version of how that all happened. But it was a journey, and it's a part of why I engage with so many different people in so many different places in the spectrum of military service, and it's been a huge attribute and benefit for me.
What originally drew you to the Marines?
Well, that's an interesting story as well. I mean, to be quite honest, I went to the Army Recruiter's Office first, took the practice ASVAB, and they were surprised at my score, and that made me nervous. So,
for listeners who don't know that, what is the ASVAB?
Well, so the ASVAB, the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery, which is a standardized test to determine your aptitude and your vocational aptitude and where you should best fit into the organization. There's also a high, a cumulative score, I think that's referred to as the AFQT, if I remember. And, a high AFQT puts you in this kind of place to participate in, more technical places, so on and so forth. I was shocked, and so were they, at this practice test score, but that made me nervous, Mike. I have to tell you, I was like, if I'm making you nervous, this might not be a good fit. I don't know. And so I just thought I'd go take a look around. And the funny part of this story is I went to, back in the 80s, our Armed Forces recruiting offices were typically in a strip mall, in a mall somewhere, something like that. And they typically were clustered together. And, some of the older folks that might listen will remember this. So I'm thinking I'm going to enlist in the Air Force, actually. So I look for the Air Force recruiting office, and I get there, and literally there's the Marine Corps and the Air Force. Their doors are kind of opposed to each other as you walk into this, vestibule. And I go to open the Air Force's door, and it's locked. And there's that card that says, "We'll be back at," and I was in high school. Well, I was in this, came down from the university, 17 years old, 18 years old, whatever it was. And I'm like, well, I got a class like at 2:00. So I turned the other door open it up. And I was just talking about this last night. Staff Sergeant Hoffman is sitting behind his desk, and he sees, like I said, 5'10", buck nothing, walking through the door. And he's like, "Son, have I got a deal for you?" And literally, that's kind of how it happened. And actually, at the end of the day, I think without knowing it, they, the intangibles that they were talking about really appealed to where I was at the time. And really, I think who my authentic kind of self is or was. So that was attractive. I think I could have gone to any of those services, but likely I needed the Marine Corps probably as much as the Marine Corps ever could have needed me. And so it was those things that really led me to that. But it was sitting in that office that day, thinking through those things that he was talking about and saying, yeah, that's really for me. And the service in the Marine Corps was probably my favorite of all time.
You're on record. You're on record now.
Well, you know, it's just, you know, everyone has an affinity to their service. There is no component or branch that is better than the other. They're just different, and they're unique in their own ways. But my affinity for the Marine Corps is long lasting. It'll probably go with me all the way to the end. People ask, you know, as you get further and further away from retirement, so people are like, so where'd you serve? And I'm like, I was in the Marine Corps. And that's all you need to know. it was a great period of time.
The Marine Corps, when you went back and you went to the private sector kind of for the first time, you had mentioned that you felt like something was missing. And then that, I think, sounds like it moved you back, something in the reserve component on the Air Force side of things. What did you feel like or that you missed from your time in service that you weren't getting in the private sector?
Well, I mean, I think that there's this, you know, people use the word camaraderie. It's camaraderie. If you can find camaraderie in civilian life and you begin to do that. But I think when you're so indoctrinated into an organization that's steeped in such history, being the U.S. military, right, not confined to any single branch, there's something that connects us, right? The connectedness between knowing what it's like to stand on the footprints, or knowing what it means to get on the line, or you know, enduring that indoctrination, that is, you know, it's a bit fraternal, right? It's this fraternal organization of which you now are a member, and you can meet anyone in military service, and regardless of your occupation, your background, you can find something in which you have something to share or have a commonality. You can reminisce about the time that the drill instructor, you know, was in your face. You can reminisce about the time or commiserate around separation from family and loved ones or your home. There's just this connection that cannot truly be replicated. And I think it also comes from a little bit of a common understanding, right? You can, you know, I feel safe to say that I could go to nearly any military unit in the country today, ask 60 people to get in line, fall into a formation, and I could move 60 to 100 people. Now, that sounds kind of maybe authoritarian, but it's really more about our ability to follow, our ability to gather, our ability to move towards a common goal or a common task or to achieve something collectively. And it's just unique to us. So you miss that, right?
I'm along that same vein, Jason, right? So you have both sides of the leadership fence, if you will, the enlisted and the officer. You have time as active duty Marine Corps, which has a different, I can imagine, has a different ethos than the Air Force Reserve, which then has a different ethos from the Army National Guard. What would you say is something, if you had to accumulate those experiences together and extract from them a lesson or a trait that you have pulled forward with you from those collective experiences into your time in agriculture, what would you say that would be?
Well, you know, quickly what pops to my head is, you know, I was fortunate when I came to Cargill that the leader of our business unit was a servant leader, which was very reminiscent to me in terms of the leadership attributes and skill or style or whatever that I espoused and developed myself through the years of service that I had. I think, you know, never asking somebody to do something you wouldn't do yourself is a part of authentic leadership. It doesn't mean that you will do it. It doesn't mean that, but it means that you wouldn't ask somebody to do something that you wouldn't do yourself. And that's a trait that kind of comes out, right? You can feel that, especially if it's authentic. And I think that's a very important attribute, regardless of where you're at. You know, humble and servant is really important to, you know, when your leadership perspective is, I'm working for you, you're not working for me, and I hope you achieve the things that you want to achieve, and our role and purpose is to, you know, coach, train, develop, mentor, and help people advance and achieve the things that they want to achieve, that it stands out a lot of times in various places.
And can you tell the story around that moment or that sense when you realized that agriculture was that place where you could continue service, right? Was that pivotal moment when you decided that this was in fact your next career path?
Yeah, well, I have a bit of an agricultural background. You know, both my parents are from North Dakota. They're North Dakota farm kids, and I have a extensive background with my extended family, all in agriculture. So, you know, we weren't intimately involved, but, you know, it was a background. So it was interesting, that cross section, because as I'm serving in the Minnesota Army National Guard, my XO, who's working for me, has a pretty, pretty decent job here at Cargill. And inevitably we separate a little bit. He has a different job. He ends up in Southern Indiana. And one night I get a call and he says, Jason, you're going to come to work for us. thank you. I'm good. Things are on a nice trajectory. Everything's fine. And then I went on a ski trip to Vail, Colorado, to meet my buddy here, Kyle, and his wife. And I get introduced to the leadership of what was then our business unit called Ag Horizons. Mm. I had no intention of leaving service. And I spent some time getting to know these folks. We were invited to dinner. They were just a remarkable group of people. And I went back to Minnesota and didn't really think much of it, but I was thinking, what a great organization. I get another call. No, Jason, you're really coming to work for us. When can you start? And I'm like, no, that's not going to be the case. But I will come in and talk to some folks. And I started to think seriously about it. As I had told my wife, if an opportunity had ever arisen that we would move out of military service and into a normal life, I would pursue that opportunity. And so I did, and I came to the headquarters of Cargill here at the office center here in Wayzata, and I walked in the door, and it had such a familiar feeling of where I had come from. And when I was looking in the waiting area, it was all about the values of the organization. This was a values-based organization, and its values were 100% aligned to mine. And it had a base in agriculture, which I had an affinity to as well. I knew then that I was home. And, you know, as an aside, when I was retiring, when I was leaving the AGR program to come to work for Cargill, I had a strong realization that I'm one of the most fortunate people ever to be able to serve in the United States military, the organization that protects the world, and to work for Cargill and the U.S. farmer who feeds the world. That's pretty powerful, and it's a great place to be, and it was easy. And working for ag, working for U.S. farmers, working in the food industry is a really, really fulfilling career path.
Did Cargill and the Ag Horizons Initiative, when you opened those doors, thankfully they weren't locked, did they have a veterans hiring program or initiative at that time? And what was that like for you? How was your service perceived by the folks that would become your new family? And then how did you sort of build that out into the work that you've done with Cargill with the veterans today?
Well, I think, you know, what's interesting is I had, you know, someone blazing a trail for me and my friend Kyle. And, you know, his service was respected because Kyle was respected because he's a great leader as well. But secondarily, or maybe perhaps primarily, we know that there is a strong and long tradition of military service amongst rural Americans. Farmers, farm families have a strong and steep tradition also in military service. In Ag Horizons, which is kind of our grain division, these are people that are relating to farmers, relating to that service, and have a high affinity and respect for it. So I was welcomed, you know, coincidentally, as I moved to work now for Kyle, who again, by the way, used to, you know, juxtaposition.
Yeah.
He ends up being notified for deployment to Iraq. So it was 2005, and so 2 weeks into this job, my friend is going to develop me into commercial capability in the ag business. He's deployed to Iraq, and I found myself alone in southern Indiana, in an organization I've been for 2 weeks, in a town that I've now lived in for 5 days. And that was the kind of sink or swim moment. And I will say without question, the military background, telling people that you had just left the military or what your service was highly, highly supportive and very much respected.
I think you're the perfect person to ask this question to, and it's a difficult one, so I'm going to ask it anyway. But we've talked so much about the positive aspects that the veteran community brings to this sector, right? And how they're suited for these different positions and, you know, based off their experiences and their technical backgrounds, et cetera. In your experience with veterans and transition groups across many different sectors, what would you say is something a transitioning veteran needs to be cautious of? Where are they failing in the communication of that, or the transition of their the transition into the private sector? Where do they need to be aware that they may not be best suited for something like this?
I don't know about the tail end there about not being best suited. So I'll try to work it backwards perhaps a little bit. The one thing that I think that I've watched and I've seen, and I've seen from myself, I've seen from, you know, other friends of mine that are here working for us at Cargill, is that the application of the leadership skills developed within the military or your military service are absolutely the things that we're looking for. We want those skills. The way in which you apply that skill set in the civilian workforce is completely different than the way you can apply it in your past experience. You know, our military organizations have matured tremendously in the last 30 years. I mean, when you think of, you know, where we were in, you know, 88 to 2018, you know, from my spectrum, very radically different in a strong maturity. Yet at the end of the day in the military, you need to have instant willingness and obedience to orders to achieve a thing that could be, you know, a matter of life and death. We do some big things at Cargill, and big things happen in many organizations across the country. Not very many of them are life and death. And so this application has to be different. And so that to me is the biggest, I guess I would call it, watch out, or the place where I've seen folks that are transitioning kind of get off the path, because in our civilian workplaces, in our, you know, companies and organizations across the country, not everybody takes well to that. You know, there are hierarchies in organizations, but the way we operate is differently. We continue to try to work together, get perspectives, and we do that in the military as well. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a bit of a fundamental difference of thank you for your input, we're doing this, versus, okay, let's collectively decide how we're going to move forward. And, you know, when you come in with the hammer, it better, you better bring the velvet hammer, let's just put it that way, versus, because it just takes a different, kind of approach, right?
You mentioned big things that you're working on at Cargill, Jason. Entice the veteran now to pursue a transition into your organization. What are some things you guys are working on that you'd like to share or that you can share with the veteran to get them interested about Cargill?
Well, you know, I mean, I'll talk more organizationally. I think I'll talk in big picture organizationally of what I think is the major enticement to come to a place like Cargill, or to come to Cargill specifically, because, you know, again, we want people to go chase their dreams and do what they want to do. And within Cargill, that's unlimited. The myriad of occupations, jobs, careers, whatever, are here. We have them all. I used to kid our college recruiters. I was like, we're the greatest place ever. We just have to go to the counselor's office, and when the counselor tells the graduating senior, hey, you're going to have 7 different careers or jobs in your life, we just say, come to Cargill, because you can have all 7 of them here, and you never have to leave. This is going to be fantastic. You know, but what makes Cargill a place for service members and veterans is really our culture, right? When you arrive here, you'll find that you actually can find many of the things that you are perhaps missing in not being in service. We want to put people first, and that's a pretty strong attribute of military service. We care for our people. We do the right thing. I mean, very synonymous with military values, right? So people first, do the right thing, and then reach higher. That is those are our 3 core values.
What was the third one?
Reaching higher. We want to do more. We aspire to be better. Those 3 things are, I mean, they to me feel synonymous with military service. I serve because I care for people. I'm in service to my country, people first. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the right thing. We're based on doing the right thing, right? Our code of conduct, or the way we operate, our morals and values, everything of every service is based on values and principles, doing the right thing. And we're a bunch of type A personalities. We aspire for more, right? We want to go do other, we want to reach higher. And so that is incredibly enticing. And then, you know, for me personally, and I think others, I'm surrounded by the smartest people there are. And every day I have to personally reach higher to try to keep up with these really talented, really smart, incredible people that are participating in our organization at all levels. And then outside of that and those kind of, you know, value drivers, the work we're doing is important. We are helping the world. We are providing for the world in a responsible and sustainable way that is filling the need of food across the planet. And I'm super proud of the things that we're doing specifically in sustainability. I'm really proud to be a part of the company, and that, you know, that's a feeling that, you know, that you remember when you were in the Marine Corps, or you remember when you were in the Army or the Air Force. That feeling of good pride to be a part of something that's bigger than yourself and is doing things in the right way for the right reasons.
As a veteran coming in, or as any new employee coming into Cargill, what are some of the challenges within the industry that they that are happening right now that they should expect to face or deal with, either specific to the grower, commodities, food ingredients? What are some of those things that the industry is experiencing right now that a new incoming member to Cargill should be ready for?
I mean, I maintain this kind of focus a little bit on production agriculture, but throughout the entire supply chain, I mean, we're in a time of disruption, for sure, right? I mean, there is more happening faster. These change curves are steeper and closer. And so your ability to be quick, nimble, agile, one of the most difficult things I think for us to accept is this idea of failing fast. Well, failure actually is, a valued kind of skill set. Do you have the capability to identify an idea, have a point of view, implement a program to try to achieve, and if it doesn't work, be able to run away from it quickly and move on. I think you just need to be prepared for that, wherein your military service typically is, get the manual out, get the instructions out, follow the process. We've done this for, we're going to do a fire mission. Okay, well, we know how to do a fire mission. This goes here, you set the stakes there, you do this, right? Your new reality is we don't know for sure, and we need to figure out a way to grow. And what's your point of view and idea that's never been tried before? And if it fails, it's okay. And in fact, it gets us to, where we're trying to go faster, the more of those that we get. So I think that's just a really important thing to prepare yourself for as you come into this workforce and when you come to Cargill. It's value, right? We want people to try hard. We want them to come up with great ideas. And when some of those don't work, doesn't mean that you're off the team. It means get back into the pit and get another one going.
You talked about how excited you were about some of the sustainability initiatives and work that Cargill's doing right now. Can you share a little bit about what some of those may be?
Well, I think you've seen some of those. I mean, the things that are out there publicly, we're really excited about regenerative agriculture. We've committed acres and acres to sustainable production here in the United States. We continually are looking for ways to ensure that we're responsible across the agricultural spectrum, especially the production agriculture, how we can assist and work with folks. So, it's an interesting time across the board. We've got, we have a responsibility, quite frankly, to continue to provide, food for the world in a safe and secure manner. We want to focus on food security, but we have to do that in a way that is mindful of our current generations, our current environment, and the future of where we're going. So there's an incredible effort within Cargill. I encourage folks to take a look at it at cargill.com and right on the front page and look at what we're doing in terms of sustainability. To get a good feel for what that is.
Do you think more needs to be done around measuring these sustainability effects and these ESG practices? Do you think that there's technology that can help us do that? Do you agree or even a problem with measuring these regenerative practices?
So I'm not an expert at all in the field, but what I will say, just generally speaking, as we do with anything else, what gets measured gets done, right? I mean, that's a great military adage. But if you're not measuring anything, then you're likely not to either move it forward or at some point it trails off. So I think a key component to this is going to be, can we show measurable results, which I think we'll be able to do. And that technology, I think, is in play today. When you take a look at what we can see, know, and do because of all different types of imagery that we're able to cultivate, all different types of data points that we'll be able to gain directly out of fields, directly from growing crops, all the information that we can obtained from the farmer themselves, when and if and when we get willing to use that and share that. There's a tremendous amount of information there, and I think we'll be able to absolutely measure the success of what we're doing.
Yeah, I think that's a really important position to be open to those kinds of incorporation metrics, because I believe it is more than just the implementation of a practice. I think there has to be some measurable component to it. And it's really exciting to hear you say that that's an important aspect to how you guys are also approaching this regenerative sustainability initiative that's gaining a lot of traction amongst consumers and folks as a part of the broader chain. Jason, as we wrap up, I just wanted to give you one last opportunity. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention here, or a topic that you wanted to discuss that we haven't yet?
Well, I think we covered a lot of ground in this little episode. And I just can't tell you, how much I appreciate the opportunity to talk about the subject matter, and then B, about Cargill and our desire to help transitioning veterans, to help veterans and service members find their path. And we think that we have a good one here. And so I encourage anyone that is transitioning to look. We are everywhere across the country. Check out Cargill if this is a place that sounds good for you. I will say again, agriculture is the spot. I'm 100% convinced that U.S. agriculture, the food industry and food in general, is going to obviously remain one of the key components and topics that we tend to not discuss that much relative to its importance. When I think about all the things that are going on, food security and our ability to continue to feed the world is about as important as it gets. So appreciate the opportunity, appreciate the time, and just thanks for having me.
No, thank you so much for being a part of this, Jason. I thought that your perspective continues to be one that is incredibly unique. And the value that you bring to this industry from those experiences, the work that you're doing within the veteran community through Cargill and those efforts, I think are top notch. So thank you for agreeing to be a part of this.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you. Jason's background as an enlisted Marine, Air Force Reserve, and Army National Guardsman give him such a unique perspective on military service and an ability to engage with veterans from across the branches. His explanation of how this collective set of experiences equipped him with a set of skills ideally suited for a post-service career in agriculture is really insightful. He touches on the sentiment of shared values on a common culture between ag and the military community that I think is important to highlight, as many veterans are often looking for more than just a career after transitioning. They want to serve somewhere doing something they believe in. Servant leadership comes up in our discussion, which is often a leadership trait practiced by military members and then brought forward with them into the private sector. For our listeners, I'd be curious to hear from a hiring expert or someone in agribusiness their thoughts on this trait. Is it something they look for during the hiring process? How do they find it best articulated during an interview? Chris Thorne or Michael Quinn or Shantae Hall from Centurion Military Alliance or Higher Military, if you're listening, I'd love to hear your thoughts. If you enjoyed this episode and think other military veterans and supporters would benefit from the insights shared by Jason Burley, please leave us a review and share on social media. You can also find these episodes and learn more about AGD Consulting by visiting our website at www.desaconsultingllc.com. That's DESA consultingllc.com, and by clicking on our newsfeed. Finally, if you have any recommendations of future guests who are military veterans or supporters who are leading the way in agribusiness, ag tech, or agripreneurship, please send them our way. I'm your host, Mike Desa, and until next time, stay frosty.